Are you working
We're
on
not,
some?
but I wanted to add one thing to this from a my perspective. Will often be the generalist, as was mentioned. I kind of do a lot of different things and have done a lot of different things. And so, you know, another reason to focus on this is private business use. And although Alan will talk about this in much more detail and is much better at this than I am, is not contemporaneous with you, but it is a nice hook sometimes. If you care about this and can say the IRS cares about this, you can find out about a lot of things on your campus that you might not otherwise know are going on because, you know, necessarily if they're reporting it on this report, you have a little window into what they might be doing and maybe some direct, you know, stuff that you know is UBIT and other things that you might go, I wonder if there's something related to that, that's a UBIT-like activity.
Right.
Or
right.
Sales tax.
Well, if I can, too, something that for audit purposes, and being the tax professional, you really have to consider tax and bond audits to be a little bit different than the typical audit, being UBIT or whatnot. Part of it is we're not really being audited. We're actually the facilitator, the way station. We're the issuer and not the taxpayer. And the taxpayer is actually the bondholder. That really strips us of any kind of leverage that we could have as we go through the audit by saying, well, we'll go to court with that because you really don't have jurisdiction, so you can't go to court. Right. And that can put you in a bind to the extent that you really need to work with the agent team. The only recourse you have, if I understand, and Alan, feel free to jump in, it's your appeals at the IRS. And I remember being at a conference once, and in those days, they had some pretty tough agents, and they were all saying, yes, and if we don't like this, we're going to go to appeals. And appeals was over here going, whatever. So, you know, it wasn't it's not really, there's not really a level playing field when it comes to your audit. We also found that you're going to be audited. There's a record retention issue, and Alan and Barbara are going to talk about this as well. But you're not audited over the past 3 years, which at least is something doable. You could be audited over 30 years or 60-year period of time. And that's documents that no doubt you're not going to have. We even have a really good archive library, and we don't keep those kind of documents.
Right. They'll ask for all your trust statements, all your management contracts, sort of all of that. That, you know, if you're staying on top of this and sort of doing annual reports and keeping up with it, that will be easier. You know, there's a cost to doing all that, but it's going to cost less than if you're doing it sort of in the guise of an audit.
Yeah, what do they say? The cost of compliance may seem a lot, but the cost of noncompliance is unforgiving.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'll just note, having worked at the IRS in their Office of Chief Counsel doing bonds, one thing we did notice was that issuers often got flummoxed because their internal record-keeping policies required records to be kept much shorter period of time than the IRS required. And so you need to, if your records say we only have to keep records, or if your policy says you only have to keep records 3 to 5 years, that's not long enough. You need to create a special exception for your taxes and bonds if you haven't done so already.
And one more thing I'll mention, if you're involved in a really hairy audit, it may sort of rise to the level of a disclosure item. So keep that in mind as well. It may affect, you know, sort of selling bonds in the future. So tax compliance has many layers. We're going to focus on, again, the private business test and the corrective action today. One thing on arbitrage rebate, because it's on the screen, we've had 10 years plus of historically low rates and really not any arbitrage payments. Rates are going up. Positive arbitrage is coming back. You know, we did an investment agreement for a client last week that is going to have $300,000 in positive arbitrage in the construction fund. So just keep that in mind that, you know, arbitrage is more exciting now. You can earn more money, but you have to, again, stay on top of the compliance side of it.
Well, if I could, if you go back to that slide, when I looked at this, Alan, I really liked it because you've got these four issues, and these are the issues that, from an internal perspective, you're responsible for. And they each have a different criteria. It's not as if they're similar. And they also come with a different cast of players. So who you're going to work with internally with arbitrage is different than who you're going to work with PBU. And certainly corrective actions, and then record retention is a whole other issue. So what you're seeing here is it could be a good portion of your entire administrative staff having to work with bonds to some degree on various issues.
PBU, you have to work with everybody, right? Every building, every facility.
And PBU gets it, and then we'll get into that as we go.
Right.
But it always reminds me of the person at the circus who's able to do the plates, the twirling plates. He has four or five of them going. That's kind of what, when you're doing bonds, that's kind of what you're dealing with. So it's very interesting.
All right. So the main sort of buckets of compliance with respect to ongoing monitoring are, again, yield restriction and arbitrage. We're not going to spend much time on those today. And then the private business use or use of bond finance facilities. So what are you doing with those facilities after the bonds are issued, day in, day out, over the life of the bonds? So let's talk for just a minute about sort of what constitutes private business use and sort of the difference between a governmental bond and a 501c3 bond. And I'll go just left to right on each of the bullet points. So for a 501c3 bond, you're allowed a 5% private business use limit. And a governmental bond, you're allowed 10% private business use. Both of those are subject to a $15 million cap. So if you have a larger bond issue, $150 million or more for a governmental, you know, 10% would be $15 million. So if you have something larger than $150 million bond issue, you're going to get less than that 10% PBU. Another big difference on the percentages is that for a 501c3 bond, cost of issuance paid with bond proceeds is counted as PBU. So if you start with 5% and you use your 2% cap on cost of issuance, you're left with only 3%. So that's a really small number. Some people want some more sort of room there, so they will use other proceeds to pay the cost of issuance, and that will buy you sort of back up to the 5%. But keep in mind on the 501c3 that cost of issuance will eat away at your allowable. For governmental bonds, cost of issuance is not counted as PBU.